So we're recording you in stereo.
Wow.
In archival quality.
Does that make me better?
I don't know. So all this eventually will go just straight to the archives.
Before we get really started, would you take this back with you, please?
Sure.
I kept saying I would get it to them, and I didn't do a back piece on it. Probably should.
Oh.
This is the governor, you can see, he was about out of office.
Yeah.
And he used to always complain to the superintendent of state police and to the General Miller of the National Guard that they all had badges and all these fancy gizmos. He was commander in chief and he had nothing. So this is what they did. This is falling apart.
Yeah.
This is what they did at one of our cabinet meetings.
That's great.
Till him goodbye.
That is wonderful.
Four stars.
Four stars, exactly. Exactly. Three stars next to him.
That's Superintendent Williams.
Fantastic.
I probably should do a back piece on that, shouldn't I? So they've got names. This is General Miller.
He's got a name tag, so that's good. Yeah, that's great.
Oh, that'd be fun for the archives.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. That's just fantastic. He's having such a good time.
Oh, he was having, he was just laughing and laughing and laughing.
Yeah, these are wonderful. Three stars,
two stars.
That's fantastic.
Maybe I should keep it and do a back piece on it, huh?
Sure, you could do that, or I can also take it and scan it so you can see the pictures, you know, whichever one you want to do.
Why don't I just do a back piece on
it?
I didn't even think about that, but they probably want the names.
Yeah, yeah, as many as you can get.
Yeah, okay. I will do that.
We'll be going through and saying, okay, who was that in 1985 standing over there?
Well, and I've gone through some of those that have been digitized, and I've got some names that I've got.
Mm-hmm.
One of these days I'll make a trip up there and sit down with them and tell them who some of those people are.
Yeah. When I interviewed Vern Duncan, he was just the week before, just coincidentally, he'd gotten all his Rajneeshee boxes out. And so he was happened to have been going through those. But as we were talking, at the end, he said, oh, come downstairs. And he had just been going through, because of Vic's death, he'd been going through. So he has pictures of Vic at his house. And because Vic was in the milk campaign, where, you know, the got milk thing. And so Vern's daughters made fun of that. And Vic came over and they said, Governor, got milk. So there's a picture of Vic and the daughters with their milk. And so he's just scanning. Vern was scanning things and just sending me all these.
Oh, my gosh.
All these pictures. It was great.
Well, I've got my huge Atiyah box, but I'm not ready to part with it yet.
Yeah, well.
Not the Atiyah, the Rajneeshee box.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot. And there's been a lot written about the Rajneeshees, but no one sat down and really written the Rajneeshees.
Well, and I'm probably the only one that has the whole story.
Yeah.
Les Zeitz and I did collaborate. He did that six series, six piece, or six, what hour, I want to say. And we collaborated a little bit on that, but that's as far as it went.
Yeah.
Everybody says, Jerry, you got to write it, you got to write it. No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not a writer, and I'm not going to do it. But I will someday turn everything. I made the Attorney General very, very nervous because I kept daily records. I had to. Almost moment by moment, because I had things happening at home. I had things happening everywhere, so I just kept a running yellow tablet. The Attorney General kept saying, get rid of those, get rid of those.
Yeah.
They could ask for them under the public records law, and then we're sunk.
Yeah.
I never did.
Yeah.
But then after it was all over with, I said, now what do I do? And he said, put them in your attic.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait for time to pass.
Uh-huh.
Wait for time to pass. Absolutely. So what I'd like to do today is just get started.
Okay.
So the first question I'm asking everybody is, so how did you meet Vic Atiyah?
I met him actually through my husband. One evening, my husband came home from work and said that he'd gotten a call that a Senator Atiyah or something like that wanted to meet with him in the morning. Did I know Senator Atiyah? No, I had no idea who he was. And my husband's name was Al. He met with the governor in the Capitol Building coffee mm-hmm. shop that next morning,
mm-hmm.
at which time then Senator Attia wanted my husband to assist with his 1974 run for governor. Mm-hmm. So after, my husband was a great person to never jump into anything without mm-hmm. lots of thought. And mm-hmm. after he studied up on Victor, he decided, yeah, he could do that.
Mm-hmm. Was this before the primary or before the general?
This was before the primary. Okay. This is when he was first jumping
yeah.
in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Early on.
So he jumped in, and in the 74 campaign, he was Marion County chair.
Okay.
And, of course, I assisted him, and that's yeah. when I first met him. And then in the 78 campaign, 78? After the 74 campaign, Victor couldn't decide. He wanted to run again. He
right.
really felt he was meant to be governor.
Yeah.
But because of the loss, he wasn't too sure. And he picked some key people to sit down and talk to. You know, mm-hmm. what would you think if I ran again? What do you mm-hmm. think I need to do? And he met with Al again, and Al signed up for the 78 campaign. And in that campaign, I'm trying to remember what he did for him then. That may have been the time that he was statewide coordinator of all county chairs.
Okay.
And I think he did that in the next campaign as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I met Victor Attia.
Mm-hmm. So how closely did you work with him, or did he know you, especially the 78 campaign?
Just through campaign
just
events.
Campaign
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So why would he know you well enough to say you would be on the short list for chief of staff?
That's everybody's question.
Yeah.
That's absolutely everybody's
yeah.
question. Mine too.
Okay.
Mine too. Throughout the course of those campaigns, I can't remember what year it was that the legislature passed the Oregon Ethics Law.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican Senate Minority Leader was entitled to one appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Called me up and asked if I would. I was the second appointment to that committee.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of the blue sky.
Yeah.
I adored him. I thought he was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Always was very proud to be involved with his campaigns. Never was embarrassed by anything he did.
Mm-hmm.
But was shocked
yeah.
that he had asked me to go on that. Because that, in fact, my husband said, "Do you know what you just agreed to do?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, I served on that ethics commission until I went to work for the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Was chair of the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that grew, I don't know, he must have seen something. I don't know what it was, but he did.
Yeah. Huh. It's fascinating. So,
by the way, he also knew the president of the company I was working for, and I'm sure there had been some conversation
there. Yeah, no, there's that kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
in the background, I'm sure. But you just kind of look at these things. I just found out yesterday that someone I went to college with is now the Undersecretary for Education.
Oh, wow.
Under Arne Duncan, like the number two person.
Wow.
It's like, oh, no wonder I didn't hear from you this summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was out of town for most of the summer. Oh, well, there you go. Ted's moved to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
How did they pick Ted?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So, talk about when he asked you in 70, was it 78? Before, yeah, it had to have been right after the election.
Mm-hmm.
He asked you to be his executive assistant at that point.
Well, that's an interesting story. The only thing that I heard from him was a call. I was working in Portland, and
mm-hmm.
I got a call from him
mm-hmm.
During the transition
mm-hmm.
that a member of his transition team would be in touch with me. They wanted to discuss something with me. Well, I was conducting an ethics commission committee meeting, and an individual from the transition team motioned to me to come outside, and
mm-hmm.
I went outside, and he said, "We need to meet with you just right away." And I said, "I can't leave. I'm chair,"
yeah.
and we were in the middle of an ADDIE issue. He said, "Fine, call me as soon as you're through,"
mm-hmm.
which I did, and he said, "I'll meet you then at the Equitable Tower in the restaurant." So we're sitting up there where you could look out and see all of the State Department buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm instructed to, by the governor, to offer you a job with him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really, what? And he mm-hmm. said, it's up to you. He said, look out there and see all the buildings, and whatever one you want is yours. And I said, no, I don't do things that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed and talked and talked and talked and talked. And I was not coming forward at
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
Not for any reason. I just simply didn't. I was very, very content with what I was doing. And I was heavily involved in my company and
yeah.
just wasn't ready to leave it. And the fellow, remember now, this is different times,
mm-hmm.
and it was, you could tell he was very bothered that the governor would be considering me. Maybe not because of lack of skill, but because I was female and not powerful
yeah.
in the state.
Yeah.
And I remember these words so well, Jim. He looked at me and he said, well, you're waiting for me to tell you the governor wants you to be his executive assistant, aren't you? I said, no, in fact, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, that's probably would have been the offer, but we don't think that that's the job for a woman. And I said, fine, I don't either.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I got a call from the governor who was still, this time he wanted to meet with me personally,
mm-hmm.
and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the day, how well I remember, on a fall day when, remember the plane that crashed in Portland?
Oh, yeah.
The big passenger
yeah.
jet?
Right into the river, yeah.
That evening before that plane crashed, I was sitting with the governor telling him no,
uh-huh.
I wouldn't take the job.
Mm-hmm.
Driving home, the plane went down and I was getting all the news reports. I walked in my home, my husband was watching it on TV, and he turned the TV off. I said, don't turn that off. I want to see. No, he said, I want to know. What did you decide? I said, I told him no.
Uh-huh.
He said, you never tell a governor no. You've just done a big faux pas. You never tell a governor no. I said,
mm-hmm.
well, I just did.
Mm-hmm.
The governor had said to me, I'll be back to you in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was.
Mm-hmm.
That time I went.
Mm-hmm. The person that you talked with first, the governor talked, and other people have also talked, and he talked about it, the governor talked about it in his oral history. He talked about people in the transition, and also, especially during the first year of his time in office, but they were always around there,
mm-hmm.
What Denny kind of makes fun of as the deciders, the
mm-hmm.
people who are behind the scenes, you know, I don't know
who thought they were the deciders,
but you know, the Jerry Frank kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
So was this person, would you put that person in that camp?
Mm-hmm.
So not an ATIA person, but a, we've got a governor now and we need to
mm-hmm.
move them in the right direction
mm-hmm.
kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes perfect sense.
Very definitely.
Okay. So talk about 2 years later.
2 years later, I got a telephone call. He wanted me to meet with him and I knew very well what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I prepared myself. We had a nice long discussion. It was after hours in his office.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest fear, Jim, was, well, I had always been on the peripheral of politics
mm-hmm.
from when I was in junior high school, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
I was a girl stater, a girl's nation, all
mm-hmm.
those things. But certainly not a career I wanted to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd had 2 years to think about it. When the governor called me in again, I said, you know, Governor, we got to sit and talk about this. I like politics, but I'm not absorbed by it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never worked in the legislature, and you need somebody that knows how to champion your causes and get
mm-hmm.
them through. You need somebody that has a powerful voice in the state, and he finally stopped me. I mean, I went on with all kinds of,
yeah.
and he finally stopped me, and he said, you can do all of that. What I want is somebody who can be my alter ego, who I can trust when I'm out of state, or for that matter, traveling in the state,
mm-hmm.
that I know will carry out my agenda and not have a personal agenda,
mm-hmm.
and you're the one for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I said yes, and we moved forward.
And we moved forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, because in talking to him, looking at your predecessor, you know, he was unhappy with him within like 2 or 3 months.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. But he never said it specifically, but people like Denny have said it. It takes him a long time to work through to the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it so that, you know, Lee Johnson was one of the biggest cheerleaders in the 82 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so it all kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like when he talked to you, he was very articulate about exactly what he didn't want and did want.
Well, yeah, we talked about what he'd gotten and how it wasn't working and what he really wanted. And I understood perfectly. I mean, he is the governor.
Yeah.
And I don't care whether it was his chief of staff / executive assistant or any other member of the staff. We're there to serve him and carry out his agenda, not something of our own. And that was one of my major parts of my job, was to keep some of our key assistants on task.
Yeah.
You know, they get carried away with their own ideas and their own concepts. And no, we're here to do what the governor, it's not us who are governing, it's he who is governing.
Right. Right.
And the governor and I had a very good working, and I never ever told him the comment that had been made to me, because I knew it would upset him. But
mm-hmm.
I also knew that if he knew that I had been told that they didn't think I was appropriate for executive assistant, he would not have been very happy about that in the beginning.
Yeah.
But all things work out.
All things work out.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So talking about your working relationship, kind of go through what would happen in a day, kind of when he's in town, and then, you know, he's very clear, you know, when you talk about I need somebody to be my alter ego when I'm not here. So, you know, he's wandering off in the Middle East or, you know, going to yet another roundup or something.
Well, let me...
So, you know, he always, you know, boy, the state is in good hands while I'm gone kind of thing. So talk to me about a day when he's in town.
Well, can I give you the first week?
Sure. Perfect.
Because it is kind of fun. One of the governors selling, I mean, he, being the typical salesman,
oh yeah,
he had every reason why I should be working for him.
Right.
And one of those reasons was no more commuting to Portland. I'd been commuting from
mm-hmm.
South Salem to downtown Portland
mm-hmm.
every day. I did it for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
No more commuting to Portland, Jerry. Just
mm-hmm.
think about that. 5-minute drive to work and you're in. Okay, sounds good. Well, the first week, I was in Portland 4 of the 5 days.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. He also got ill with the flu.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember, but it was during the first week. Don't remember
mm-hmm.
which day. He calls and leaves and talks to me and says, Jerry, we need to call a special session. The previous session, they had passed a bill, and I can't remember the issues completely,
mm-hmm.
and neither could Denny. But something in the bill was worded wrongly, and it was going to cause big-time trouble. And they had to call everybody back in to correct that. It could
mm-hmm.
not be done administratively. So, Jerry, call a special session. Okay. I hang up the phone, and I'm thinking, how do you call a special session?
Mm-hmm.
So I got a hold of Bob Oliver, our legal assistant, and I said, Bob, governor just called and wants a special session. What do? He said, well, we issue a proclamation. I said, do you do that? Yep. He said, I'll write the proclamation. We'll get it out. Great. That's perfect. No problem. Next thing that occurred was that he was to have dedicated the brand new state revenue building.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he wasn't going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, guess who has to go over and do it? Never dedicated anything in my life.
Are you looking around for the champagne bottle?
I didn't know if it was going to be champagne or what it was going to be. I went over and dedicated the revenue building and got that done. And out of that came another interesting story. But that was my first week on the job, just one surprise after another.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in the boiling water from the minute I entered that office.
So had
incredible.
You had a sense that when he said, I need you to be my alter ego and run things, had you had a sense that it was going to be exactly like that?
Not exactly like that. I knew it was going to be, every day was going to be something.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a boiler room job, I'm telling
you.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I was attached to the governor with what I called my umbilical cords.
Yeah.
In those days, the cell phone
yeah.
was a battery box that sat on the middle of the floor of my car, which, right. by the way, was an unmarked state police car that I drove in,
mm-hmm.
with zillions of buttons.
Mm-hmm.
That was so the governor and I were always in touch, and I always had to check in and out with the state police so they all knew where I was
right.
every minute of the day. I had a beeper.
Mm-hmm.
At home, I had an emergency telephone that was only linked to the governor and the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fourth one. I don't remember what the fourth one was. But we were literally linked to each other
yeah.
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
I knew that it was going to be a pressure job. And you're asking about, you know, on a day when he was in town. A day when he was in town, was busy. It was busy, but I have to tell you, the days didn't differ that much.
Okay.
I sat in on virtually any meeting he had. He mm-hmm. wanted me to be in his office with him, no matter who he was talking to,
right.
unless it was something very personal.
Right.
And then he'd always key me. So I sat through all of those meetings, which took me away from my desk time. And of course, our cabinet meetings, all of those were just kind of routine items.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the agency heads were channeling through me, not because they were instructed to do that, but mm-hmm. it just seemed to them that's the way they should go
mm-hmm.
in order to get to the governor anything of priority.
Mm-hmm.
When he was out of town, then I was really busy.
Yeah.
Then I was really busy. I mean, not to say that I wasn't busy before, but busy in a different way.
Right.
It was dealing with problems. And every day, I ended every day with a briefing memo to him. It was just something I did of my
mm-hmm.
own accord.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believed I never wanted my governor anywhere and be caught off guard. And I never wanted him to think that I had made a decision without his knowledge. And,
right.
and I did have to make decisions. I mean, when he was gone,
yeah.
government couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And he, as you well know, he did a lot of big-time travel.
Yeah.
But at the end of every day, he got a briefing memo that told him of basically what had occurred that day
mm-hmm.
And any decisions that had been made
mm-hmm.
and anything that he needed to be alerted to and anything that might be out there in the horizon lurking and apt to appear.
Right.
And I wish I'd saved all of them, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I think he did save some of them, particularly during the Rajneeshee time.
Yeah.
But that's the way he and I operated.
Uh-huh.
Probably entirely different than a chief of staff does now.
Yeah, but it's so much of it is it's the flavor of whoever the office holder is and the chief of staff.
Exactly.
It's what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing when I was talking about chief of staff kinds of things, it might have been with the governor himself. We were talking about you know, Lee Johnson and then you and how comfortable you felt with you. And it's in the back of my mind, because he was then talking about his role with the Reagan administration with the Columbia Gorge and that
yeah.
kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and talking with Andrew Card and things like that. But what it must have been like in the Reagan White House when Howard Baker, the former Senate leader, comes in to be the chief of staff. And, you know, apparently it worked, but you just wonder, wow.
Oh, I know. Oh.
How... What on earth was that all about?
You got a big ego sitting there.
Yeah.
And,
How would that work?
Yeah, and that's the one thing I was always very... I viewed my role as behind-the-door type person.
Yeah.
Make things happen for him.
Yeah.
Make sure it's always understood. Carry out his agenda. But
mm-hmm.
I was not the front person and never
mm-hmm.
would allow myself to be unless I was forced into it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he'd force me into it, but...
Yeah.
Only then.
Yeah.
Only then. I cherished our relationship, and I have to tell you, we had my view. I don't know where his head was, but I viewed it as an excellent working relationship.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah.
There was one time he'd been gone on a trade mission. I don't know how many weeks he'd been gone, Jim, but he'd been gone a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd gotten back, and he was going through everything on his desk. I wish they quit that message. Um, And I was working, we both worked late every night, mm-hmm. and they were only the two of us in his office. And I don't know if you knew the configuration of the office or not, but his office, the hallway came down this way from the public office, mm-hmm. through these doors into the private area. And his office was here. In between us was a little office, which was basically his scheduler, mm-hmm. and then my office. And mm-hmm. then we had doors that went all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting at my desk, working away, and pretty soon he came in, and he said, you know, I've got a feeling that there's been decisions made without my input, or without my involvement. I don't exactly remember how he said it, and I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I said, you talking about me, Governor? You see, I just feel like you've been running government without me, and I can't remember, but the insinuation was, you're stepping out too far.
Yeah.
Oh, Jim, I was crushed, because that's the one thing that I always guarded against.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. He went back in his office. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't 15 minutes later, he came back in, and he said, "That was just really unfair to you." I said, "No, Governor, if you feel that way, I need to know. But I wasn't in the mood to discuss it with you, because not only did you catch me off guard, but you crushed me. I've worked very hard not to do that to you, mm-hmm. because I know how you feel about it." He mm-hmm. said, "I know you have." And he said, "You know, I think I'm just being super sensitive because I've been out of the office so much." And he said, "Life has gone on without me." I said, "But Governor, that's what you hired me for." Mm-hmm. And I said, "If I overstep my bounds, I need to know that."
Yeah.
He said, "No, you haven't overstepped your bounds. I just overstepped mine, and I apologize." And he walked over and put his arms around me and hugged me. And he said, "Are we allowed to do this?" That's the kind of man he was.
Yeah.
Really yeah. is. Terrific guy.
Yeah. An amazing boss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some of the specific big issues. You had a little recession problem. Talk about how. So, the way I understand his governorship, basically his first year was kind of him being governor, and then from there until the end, 7 years later, it was basically governor and recession fighter at the same time. And then in 82, you know, as things are deepest, you know, you're calling special sessions in an election fall, not even an election year, you're calling it in the fall, right about now. You know, so there's, it's always, how do we balance things? How do we deal with the legislature, you know, and throw in fun things like unitary taxes and things like that. But it's just a constant drumbeat. So I assume that when you started, that was already a big deal.
No.
It wasn't. Okay. Because no. There was a first one, and there, when you look at it, there were three recessions during that three-year period. Mm-hmm. And so there was a dip out. So you must have come in and it was an out.
Well, it wasn't as impactful, let's
yeah.
put it that way.
Okay.
When he first went into office, there were a lot of what was going on dealt with natural resources and those
right.
types of things. I mean,
right.
there was the energy issue. There was the LCDC issue.
Yeah.
There was the spotted owl issue. You can go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And I kind of came in on the tail end of that.
Okay.
Now, the energy issue had subsided. That was no longer, he handled that very well, and that
mm-hmm.
went by the wayside. Was okay. We knew we had natural resource issues. The timber industry was beginning to fail. Had
right.
not yet, but was beginning to fail. Salmon fishing was failing. That was kind of the first 2 years I was in there, was the cleanup of that. One of
mm-hmm.
the things that the LCDC, you know, every county had to present their plans, and that was dragging down. It wasn't getting done, and he was frustrated by that. Wanted to get that. He felt like if we were going to move forward and bring new industry to Oregon, that process had
right.
to be completed.
Right.
There was too much uncertainty.
Right.
So there was a lot of effort put forth on that, trying to encourage all of the local government entities to get their planning done and get it in and get it approved.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, in my mind, sticks out those first 2 years
okay.
as probably the most prevalent, though we were beginning to really begin to feel the pinch. We
yeah.
knew it was coming and it was going to happen. And then that took us then to the next. It was almost as if all that was forgotten. It wasn't, but it almost, the whole focus shifted to economic development. We've got to change the economic base of this state. It
yeah.
just has to happen.
Yeah.
And up to that point, prior to the governor's election, economic development was a joke.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they all talked about it, and they had a department dedicated to it, but frankly, the department was a mess.
Yeah.
They weren't accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
And everybody's putting all their money on tourism.
Yeah.
And we knew that isn't going to change the economic. Tourism's fine, yes. We'll take anybody's money, but...
we're not Las Vegas.
It's not lasting.
Yeah.
It's not lasting at all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anything to support what needed to be supported. Education was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it just progressively got worse and worse and worse. It got really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad.
Yeah.
But that was the... And I'm going to give you this.
Mm-hmm.
This is... And I just quick, I've got boxes out there, Jim, and I'll go through them. I just have been so busy, I haven't done it.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought maybe I'd be ready for you, but I wasn't. Sorry.
That happens.
Well, the governor got in the way. You know, his timing wasn't the best.
Exactly.
This is, I thought you might like this. This is the debates.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And this is my, it's not the entire working book, but I would help. Formulate
right.
things for the debates.
Right.
And for the moment, this is the best I can offer you.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But I thought that would give you some background.
Great.
And so
is this for me to look at and give back or straight to the archive?
You can take it.
Fantastic.
Now, there may be things in there that someday I wish I kept, but I'll know where to find it.
They'll be in the archive.
Yeah. But I don't know if you plan on interviewing Chet or not.
Yes, fascinating, because at the
I
Memorial
love Chet,
Service,
by the way.
Boy, I was, you know, getting all sorts of connections in there.
Yeah, it's glad
great.
You were there.
And Ted, when I saw him, was a little reticent. And I really want to talk to Ted, partly because of this, but partly because he and the governor in the last few years have developed just a heck of a bond.
Oh, wonderful bond.
It's just like, wow, we need to talk about this. So he's a little reticent with me. And then I heard from Denny. And Denny was saying, okay, he sent me this whole big thing about, you know, Memorial Service. And he saw, said, oh, Ted was in great form. I told him that I could show where he almost won the 1982 election because I made a mistake. And he said, I'd love to have a beer. So different reactions there.
Well,
whereas with Bob Packwood, I had a great positive interaction
oh, yeah.
with Bob Packwood. And Elaine Franklin was funnier than
she was?
Yes, because I said to Bob, you know, the Governor Tia asked me to write this. He said, put in any dirt if you can find anything. This needs to be a complete picture
uh-huh.
of the time and him
exactly.
and everything. And I turned around and Elaine Franklin said, oh, maybe Bob will ask you to write about his. Bob didn't hear that. And she knew that. But it's like, oh, scandal. Good.
Yes, yes. Well, Ted was wonderful. You know, we had to work with him in the legislature,
mm-hmm.
And I loved Ted as a person.
Yeah,
Ted was a wonderful, warm personality. At the memorial service, we got whisked away. I didn't even get to enjoy the reception at all. We were down in the press
yeah.
room for
yeah.
a radio interview with OPB. OPB was thrilled that Ted did it because Ted would never allow himself to be interviewed for anything.
Right.
And there was Ted, and he was just effusive. I mean, it was just...
Yeah.
What a great man, and how they
yeah.
become great friends. And Victor never held any animosity towards Ted.
Mm.
He had to get the job done. He had to get elected.
Yeah.
But he had to get the job done. But he never held any animosity.
Yeah.
And
I don't think there was a sense until the last couple of weeks that, wow, we might actually win this thing huge.
That's
and
right.
So there's, I know on, not, I haven't talked to Ted, but I know on the Democratic side talking to people, there was a sense of kind of piling on, but it's like, you know, elections do what elections do.
Well, the only thing that they felt was piling on is when they accused us of calling him dangerous.
Yeah.
And they thought that was piling on.
Yeah.
That probably came closest to dirty campaign tactics there was.
Right. In an Oregon way.
Yeah. But the truth is, I mean, Denny would always excuse that and say, no, we didn't do it. It was that little old lady. And she didn't say he was dangerous, that his ideas were dangerous.
Yeah.
But frankly, that did turn the corner.
Oh, yeah.
Did turn the corner.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I got you off subject.
Nope, no problem.
This is his last inauguration, and again, it was my working book, putting it
fantastic.
Together. I thought maybe you might, just kind of shows the process.
Yeah.
And you may not even care, but...
No, this is great.
But that's there.
That's great.
Which then takes me to the economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be right straight out honest with you. I was very concerned about economic development. The staff and the governor had been concentrating so hard on all the natural resource issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were trying to band-aid what was failing
and
not having enough time to move forward and move toward the future. And the governor, I went late one night, again, we're sitting there talking, and I said, Governor, you know, I'm very concerned that while we are captured by all the catastrophes that are going on, we're not moving forward. We're not pushing out. And that's when he shared with me that he really, really wanted to bring new industry. And he had it in his head what industry he wanted to bring.
Mm-hmm.
And he just was trying, he said, like all things in politics, timing is of the essence.
Right.
And he felt the timing was almost there, but not quite yet. The McCall hangover from come visit but don't stay, which literally was, I don't know if you've gone in and watched his, some of his stuff on the Historical Society. I mean, he really did that. He publicized that everywhere he went.
Yep.
But for God's sakes, don't stay, he'd say. Well, people laugh about it now, but it was serious.
Oh, yeah.
And that was our reputation. When we go to governor meetings across the nation, that's what we would get thrown in our face. Mm-hmm. And they were laughing at us. Other states were going out trying to find new industries, and they would throw, don't go to Oregon. They don't want you there.
Yeah.
So he and I sat and kind of brainstormed late one night, just the two of us. When we thought timing would be right and how well it would be received and how do we make it attractive and make the citizens of Oregon comfortable with it. And in other words, how do you bring them along?
Right.
After they've been proud of this, come visit, but don't stay.
Right.
So that's when I started scratching my head and I went out on my mission that he assigned me and put together a rump group, and we developed what we called the the Economic Action Council, I think it was. And there's actually a proclamation. Can I see that?
The top one? This is the...
No, the other one.
The other one.
I think it's in that one. Oregon Economic Development. No, this is the... I don't want to take up all your time.
No, you're doing great.
I'll give you that one right back. Where did I see it? We put out a draft.
That's all in moderation. Yeah.
It must be in this one. There's actually, it's in one of these notebooks because I saw it. It was actually a directive for the Oregon Economic Action Council. And we put together a group. We began to brainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And that proclamation, it's in one of these books, Jim. Mm-hmm. But these are some of the paraphrasing of the points in that Action Council. And we went to work, and I mean, did we ever go to work? We had economic action committees in every county.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled the state. We took economic economic action tasks to all of education, mm-hmm. community colleges. Mm-hmm. I mean, even I was traveling the state, mm-hmm. carrying out the governor's agenda because he wanted to get this going.
Right.
And once that was going, he started his trade mission activity.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he suffered a lot of very severe criticism. I mean, mm-hmm. they just came at him from all blocks and tried to prove him wrong. And that was the other thing about him, you know. He knew in his mind it was right.
Yeah.
We didn't do polling. We didn't do any of that stuff. He just knew it had to be done. Yeah. And he was in his last term, and he figured he could expend whatever strength he had in the state mm-hmm. to get it on the right road.
Mm-hmm.
That action council is the one that kicked it in and changed the whole personality, the economic development agency. Off we went and had great successes. I want to tell you, it was incredible what we did.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can convince people how incredible it was because it's just too far out there. But it was unbelievable. And I say we. Of course, the governor was the front man, and he was doing the hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But once he got him halfway there, he'd hand him off to me. And in fact, NEC, we finished the negotiation right down here at Illihee Hills Country Club. And NEC is the one that prompted us to repeal the unitary tax.
Right.
I can remember driving down the freeway. We'd been meeting with them at a Japanese restaurant in Portland. And we got in the car, and we're driving home. And on the way down, I said, Governor, what do you think? Think we're going to have to repeal that unitary tax? He said, well, it's sure in our way.
Mm-hmm.
I said, are you willing to repeal it? And he said, I don't know, Jerry. We got to think about it. I don't know how much I can. I don't know how well it would be received when we're in the straits that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Next morning, he walked in the office. He said, okay, Jerry, let's get ready. Get the legislature ready. Let's take the steps to repeal it. We're going to repeal the unitary tax.
Mm-hmm.
And he called Marita at Sony, and he called the folks at NEC and said, I'm going to call a special session, and we're going to repeal the unitary tax, and I feel like I'll deliver it to you. And if I deliver it to you, will you come to our state? Yes, we will.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave him a little more leg up with the legislators. In fact, without his knowledge, that's why I kept driving home. And do you want to be responsible for NEC and Sony saying they're not coming to the state simply because? But we got it repealed.
Mm-hmm.
And because of Victor's credibility, integrity, and a man of word, they trusted him. They hung in with us.
Mm-hmm.
They were ready to go to another state.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us a while to get that process done, but they waited for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the incredible side of that man.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing on those trade missions. You know, the media and the opposing party would always say, okay, what'd you come back with this time?
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to explain to them that's not the way you do it.
Yeah.
You have to build the trust, you have to build the reasons to come, and you have to prove to them. Well, you spend all this money, and you go over there, and you don't come back with anything. They're just, they were unmerciful.
Mm-hmm.
They really were.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he did. And they were long-lasting relationships right to the day of his death.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had the Taiwanese calling, we had the Japanese calling, we had the Chinese calling, I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Those were all those long-lasting, we really trust that man relationship.
Yeah.
Need more of those.
Yeah. One thing that I'm going to look at pretty carefully is what has happened to those trips since then. Because you get the sense now they are go over only when there's something to sign trips.
You know,
and it started immediately with Goldschmidt and their very first trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vic went with them and...
Yep.
Oh, do it this way. It's like, okay. Whatever, I'm here just to introduce you because that's how you do things. And
mm-hmm. But they get that ego in the way.
Yeah.
Now, we all know that Victor had an ego. We all have egos.
Oh, yeah.
But that ego didn't get in his way.
No.
Right? He was truly interested in people, and he really believed in building those relationships.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was incredible to watch him work. And it was such an honor to be maybe you'd say the leg man. I don't know. I don't know how you'd describe what I was doing, but it was just incredible. And I would know that in his mind he had these things rolling. And he really did. He really, Jim, I don't know how to explain some of this stuff, but he just really didn't share a lot.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Did you get a sense there was a kitchen cabinet? You know,
he'd
call his friend Jim, or was it just, you know, angst, and then he'd sleep on it, and he'd come to a decision, and off we go.
No kitchen cabinet.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody has told you the story, and I'm not even sure I should tell it, but I'm going to. I'm going to because I'm still angry about it. Very proud to have gotten the man elected. This would have been his 78 campaign. And to celebrate the election, he had all of his key campaign people to a big dinner and celebration at Nendale's in Beaverton. Now, see, there's another mark of the man, you know?
Exactly.
Humble.
Big deal. It's
nothing flashy.
Across from the car dealership and next to the hotel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I wasn't sure we were going to go, and we didn't bother to get a room reservation. And finally, we decided we'd go. And Al kept saying to me, I've got to go. And I'd say, yeah, fine. Well, we were select getting our reservation. We got stuck down in the basement in some little makeshift room that had literally a lockable folding wall.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And we're in there just relaxing, getting ready to go up for the banquet, and we hear all this conversation next door. Well, the conversation next door were what Denny calls the deciders, who were not deciders, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's facetious when we say that. They're plotting. Okay, we got him elected now, and you're going to go do this, and you're going to go do that, and we'll convince him he has to do this, and wow, we're in now. We're ready to go. And I'm sitting there doing a slow burn. Now, mind you, I have nothing...
Right.
Nothing to burn on this one.
Yeah.
But I'm getting angry. And I looked at my husband and I said, is that the way it works? They're going to own our governor that we work to get elected? And he was disgruntled too. For years, we never told the governor. Never, ever. But those were the very people that tried to own him.
Yeah.
That would have been typically called the kitchen cabinet.
Yeah.
Nobody owned Vicatia.
Yeah.
Nobody. And a lot of those people were angry at the governor. Now, they had an open door to him.
Oh, yeah.
And he politely listened to him. But they didn't own him.
Yeah.
At all.
From talking to him about it, because I asked him, not this direction, but I came at it another direction. But he talked about how it was a surprise to the business community that this Portland businessman was not in their pocket.
Wasn't the Portland business community.
Oh, yeah, no, there's a broader thing here. But he talked about some expectations that simply weren't met when he began to make decisions and said, you know, we're going to do this. And that there was an expectation there would be a kitchen cabinet. And
there never was.
He, like, met with some people once or twice and said, I don't think so.
Or to appease them, I'll say it differently.
Yeah, okay.
To appease him.
Yeah.
We'd call him in for a brown bag lunch. Now, tell me that doesn't put you worried.
Exactly.
And he would.
Is catering.
Yeah. and he would listen.
Yeah.
Very politely he would listen.
Yeah.
But nobody, and I can say that as easy and as truthfully as anybody can, nobody owned that man. And if they tried to, bye.
One of the things that we don't have much in the archive, and he did not talk about in much detail, was, I mean, we've got his legislative stuff, but he was the rug guy, and he had to have learned stuff in Atiyah Brothers. You know, I can see, for instance, what he would learn there would make perfect sense on the trade missions. You know, this is how salesmen do it. You're just basically, hi, I'm here. This is the quality of what we have. When you're thinking about it, come to us. That makes perfect sense.
And here's why it's good for you.
Here's why it's good for you. But the leadership kinds of things, you know, keeping things in himself, but then, you know, there's you and him as a team. You know, where does that come from? And That's going to be hard to get to.
Well, so I was talking to somebody. I'd been with Dick for maybe a year, and Jim, I'm going to tell you, I'll probably say it 1,000 times until you tell me to quit saying it. We couldn't have had a better working relationship, mm-hmm. I mean, we understood each other completely, except unitary tax isn't a good example, but I'm going to use it. It's not a good example because it's not the way it worked. But for example, sitting in a meeting, we knew the unitary tax was our biggest speed bump. Mm-hmm. Had to do something about it. Fine. Now, typically, I don't know if he assumed that I was thinking like he was. Maybe he thought I was too much of his alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
Or he just, it was like he went from point A to point Z.
Yeah.
And Z will be delivered. And I'm trying to find everything in between.
Yeah.
And working hard at it.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's busy. He's on the run. He's going. He's traveling. That man was, oh, wow. I don't know how he ran us all into the ground. I have mm-hmm. to tell you honestly, he did mm-hmm. run us into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept right on going.
Yeah.
But I was talking to somebody about that, and I said, you know, I just am having trouble. Somebody I really trusted. And they said, well, I've got a book you need to read. How to Understand the Arab Mind. And I wish I still had it. I mm-hmm. gave it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it is a different culture. Now, remember that. When we prepared him for his Mideast trip, we went back to Washington, D.C., and he was briefed by the mm-hmm. State Department, by CIA, by everybody. That's when they were taking people hostages.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
He got audience with 4 of the Arab leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Long audiences. I mean, mm-hmm. one was supposed to be 15 minutes, and we got worried that he wasn't coming out of there. We
yeah.
didn't know what had happened. He firmly believed that he understood those people,
mm-hmm.
and he firmly believed that he could help Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
He really did.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? I think he could have helped them,
mm-hmm.
because they obviously liked Vic, or they would not have spent all that time with him, way beyond anything that had been scheduled.
Right.
He understood the Arab culture. I mean, he was first generation here mm-hmm. in this country and had been there as a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
He was very hurt when he got back, and I'm calling all over Washington, D.C. to schedule time for the governor to be debriefed.
Mm-hmm.
No interest.
Yeah.
No interest.
Yeah.
But see, their minds and their culture mm-hmm. really are different. And I now believe it is an inbred thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once I read that book, I was fine. We
okay.
were off and going.
Yeah. Because he doesn't talk about that much. He, you know, he talks about the fact that he knew like 6 words of Arabic.
Yeah.
And when he checked them out, they're basically most of them dirty words.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But he doesn't talk about that much. You know, there's pride in going back to his father's village and those kinds of things. But there's, you know, that's a really good lead to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good lead to follow. One thing that I started doing, because, you know, names, Atiyah names pop up in just the weirdest places.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started a genealogy of the Atiyah family.
Oh, great.
And so I'm following things through. So I have the manifest that has a 6-year-old Vic coming back into the United States after he visited his father's village
yeah.
in 1929.
Yeah.
You know, so I have all that kind of stuff. But one thing that we were talking about the Black Commission, Hispanic Commission,
yep.
all that kind of stuff. And he's talking about, you know, in the neighborhood I grew up, it was just, everybody was just Americans. We were all from all over the place. So I had the 1930 census.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through, and it's you know, there's a bunch of people from Syria, because that's his family. And there's Japanese, and there's German, and there's Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes! Exactly the neighborhood he grew up
we're
in.
We're all living in that neighborhood. We're all human
exactly.
beings. And
you just look up that single page from the census.
Isn't that interesting?
Bing, 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 bing.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's...
But he really didn't look upon anybody being a minority.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we, the Americans, classified it that way, but that
right.
wasn't in his head.
Right.
I swear to you, that was not ever in his head.
Yeah.
And it did bother him when people... Well, it's just like when the economy was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Jerry, if they quit talking about how bad it is, it'd get better.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, Vic? He said, it's a self, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. All we want to do is talk about how bad it is. Let's yeah. talk about how good it can be.
Yeah.
He was right. And that's what we tried to swing over into this Economic Action Council.
Yeah,
how
absolutely.
Good it could be.
Absolutely.
And that's the way he led me.
Right.
When I look back on it, it's interesting. It wasn't, here's the task.
Mm-hmm.
It was, make them stop talking about how bad it is. Let's talk about how good it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I got to go back and figure out where that applies.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On the economic side, as the timber economy is shifting, talk about some of the triage kinds of things, because there were several things going on. First of all, federal lands were basically, people were saying, well, there's a limit here. And the spotted owl is coming on at the tail end of that, but the spotted owl didn't cause this. The spotted owl is kind of a exclamation mark at the end of this. But a big thing that's happening is that the corporate buyout trend is starting.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of those towers that used to have corporate offices and headquarters in Portland, they're all moving to everywhere else.
The South, primarily.
Yeah. But so the timber industry is being bought by people who say, well, I've used debt to buy this thing, so I've got to cut down a lot of trees to pay off the debt. So what kind of triage kinds of things were you doing with the timber industry? Was it focusing on, we got to retrain people? Was it focusing on opening up more timberlands? I mean, what kinds of things were you kind of
better person
doing?
To discuss that with you would be Pat Amadeo, who was assistant
okay.
for natural resources.
Yeah.
But I would tell you, the thing that gets forgotten is that as the timber industry began to fail, then so did the funding for education.
Right.
So we were putting a huge focus on education.
Right.
We were putting a huge focus on federal regulations that were hurting us.
Yeah.
Pat may know more about this, honestly, than I. I don't recall that we were terribly concerned about corporations buying up some of those
okay.
timber. There were still a lot of the timber barons out there doing
oh,
their
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
It kind of takes into, well, it's almost the end of the governor's second term before things finally, you know, the Medcos finally go out.
Well, yeah,
you know,
and we had the Georgia Pacifics and
exactly.
all of those. But that wasn't just because of the timber industry. It was because they were kind of on the, those that I would dealt with
mm-hmm.
were kind of on the other end. They received the product, and then it was what they did with the product.
Right.
And that's what was changing.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the product was being diminished, but those that moved out of here went where they could grow, what's the tree that they grow so fast, where they could grow those
yeah, the,
for the paper products,
exactly.
and
yeah.
Matter of fact, there's still a stand of them over in Eastern Oregon, which was started as an experiment when we were in office. But that's more what was happening
yeah.
in my mind, is
yeah.
that the use of that product and obtaining that product more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, we had over-harvested.
Mm-hmm.
We had to wait for that. The old growth was depleted.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, corporations were looking for something they could get their hands on more quickly.
Right.
And I think that was a lot of that change, along with all the federal regulations that
yeah.
interfered.
Okay. Good. Yeah, Pat Amadeo happens to live in Santa Rosa, where my wife and I go occasionally for spring
break. Oh, wonderful.
Break. So this next spring break, we're probably going to Santa
Rosa.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
So.
Yeah, she came up for that. Did she
yeah,
get to meet
yeah.
her? I think she shot me an email and said,
yeah,
I said that
I
wasn't going
to
be around, but to find
yeah.
you. And
yeah.
Good. Good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we connected. Definitely. So still sticking with economics. What... I mean, at the height of that 82 recession, 82, 83-ish recession, 81, 82, 83-ish recession, I mean, employment is above 12% and just stuck there.
Mm.
We've got interest rates that, you know, I tell my students about it.
Double
digit. They just can't believe it.
I know.
I graduated from high school in 77, and my grandmother gave me a $1,000 Benjamin Franklin savings certificate because in the Great Depression,
yep.
you needed that.
Yep.
And because I went to Stanford, I spent it by the beginning of my second year because, you know, that's a lot of
money. Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
But, you know, when I tell my students, well, I had this savings thing that my grandmother had given me, and it was getting 19% interest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But then you have to explain, but inflation is here. So it's basically the same interest you're getting now, mm-hmm. but you have to do these magic things to make
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And they just,
it blows their mind, yeah. Just blows stunned. Their mind.
But so during that time, how much time did you spend on let's plan for the future? The governor talked about specifically that he wanted to protect and increase the amount of money going to higher ed, and he wanted to protect and increase the amount going to economic development. So did that take a lot of time to make that? Because the legislature is not going to like that.
No, I would
everything
say,
else is being cut.
Yeah, I would say the last 4 years. In fact, I've often said all of his efforts as it related to natural resources kind of got laid aside and forgotten. Mm-hmm. Not that it wasn't still going on,
right?
But there was no focus on that anymore.
Yeah.
No media focus, no legislative focus. If I'd been Pat Amadeo, I would have been very, very frustrated.
Yeah.
He had installed that huge energy commission, alternate energy commission, on which my husband sat, and they'd come up with all kinds of alternative energy, and mm-hmm. I mean it was a he kicked off his first term with that, and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me how that just kind of, not that it wasn't still going on, it just,
yeah.
nobody was paying attention. It was all about, what are we going to do for this state?
Right.
How are we going to get out of this, and how are we going to protect our economy and mm-hmm. still change it? And mm-hmm. I would tell you mostly that and the Rajneeshis consumed us the last 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when I say that means the special sessions, the
exactly.
everything economically related.
Yeah. All the time.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work directly with the legislative leadership?
Oh, yes.
So mm-hmm. you, because I know you were in all those meetings. So
yes.
You,
mm-hmm. So I was the liaison.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So what was that like in the stress of that second term?
You know, it wasn't as stressful as you might think it was.
Mm-hmm.
We had Vera Katz. We had John Kitzhaber.
Mm-hmm.
We had Ed Fahey. I mean, they kept changing on us.
Yeah.
Grattan Cairns. Fred Hurd. Who am I leaving out? Larry Campbell. Anyway, they kept changing on us. But, you know, I never felt the animosity.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they were looking at things, you know, how can I better myself politically? I mean, that's the nature of a political person. But we met, all of us met weekly with the governor when he mm-hmm. was in town, and when mm-hmm. he was not in town, they met with me.
Mm-hmm.
We would discuss the issues, why they were important,
mm-hmm.
and here's my observation of the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Legislators would come into the governor with this, what they think was a brilliant idea. I'm not talking about leadership. I'm just talking mm-hmm. about, because the first order was Jim Campbell, his good friend,
mm-hmm.
and Tom Galt.
Mm-hmm.
They always got put through the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Period. End of subject.
Mm-hmm.
Any legislator that went to talk to the governor got put through to the governor,
mm-hmm.
regardless. Even if he was in a meeting, we'd ask them to wait because the governor would want to see them.
Mm-hmm.
So they respected him for that. They'd
yeah.
never worked with a governor that had the door open to both R's and D's.
Yeah.
It really hadn't. I mean, they kept saying to me, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure.
Exactly.
And then the new legislators, as they would be elected, they come in to me and say, is there any chance I can visit with the governor? Certainly. When's your time? And they'd just be, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
really? Yeah. That's the governor's rule around
yeah.
here. Anyway, where was I going? Oh, we would meet. The governor often, when he'd listen to their ideas, he'd listen very politely.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd start talking to them, and the idea would suddenly change, and they'd walk out thinking it was their idea.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that gym so many times I couldn't believe it. I just kind of shake my head. Wait mm-hmm. a minute. That isn't even what they came in with.
Mm-hmm.
But the governor would just, in his quiet way, turn them around, and they'd walk out with a new idea that they thought was theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And off it'd go.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting it very simply, but that's
yeah.
the way he would do it.
Yeah.
They respected the governor. And again, it goes back to that. It sounds so trite, Jim, but it's so true.
It was that respect and integrity that they knew he held, the trust they had in him,
mm-hmm.
that I cannot tell you of any. There was one time, and I've got to find the doodle for your folks, but we were working, I think it was one of the last tax measures we were working on. We had to come out with something to balance the budget. And we had, that was when Ed Fadley was in. Now he was the problem.
Yes.
Always.
Very clear in talking to them.
Always.
Yes.
Always the problem. And he had all the leadership. He had the president, the speaker, the minority, the majority leaders,
mm-hmm.
all of them back in our little conference room. And on the whiteboard, he'd drawn one of his doodles, big this
mm-hmm.
time, railroad track that went... I've got the doodle. I just haven't dug it out yet. He drew on the board this railroad track
uh-huh.
that went like this. And this was his way of illustrating that they weren't meeting. And he had to bring the railroad
right.
track together. And then he drew this and called it the golden spike.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to get that golden spike in there to bring those together.
Yep.
And when he could move Ed Fadley, that'd be the golden spike.
Mm-hmm.
And he did finally.
Yeah.
But he kept that on that whiteboard, and every time they came in, they had to look at that whiteboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he was doing that for psychological reasons. Sounds mundane and
mm-hmm.
dumb, but I know he was doing that for a psychological reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, I'm sure you've heard Denny tell the story, when every time we come out of those meetings, and we met, and we met,
mm-hmm.
and we met. And every time we came out, the press would be waiting.
Yeah.
Nope, no decision.
Yeah.
And then he finally got this put together. He walked out, no press.
No press, exactly.
that was the incident.
Yeah.
That's the only one. I'm sure they went back. I'm sure they went back and said, oh, you can't believe now what Vic wants. Blah,
right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But they worked with it. We couldn't have done all those special sessions.
Yeah.
And the governor would not call a special session unless he had the agreement
mm-hmm.
before we went. And he would not allow any outside issues to, even from his own party.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. It was constrained and it was going to go. And his idea was to have a 24-hour special session. And,
right.
And we did, but not always.
Yeah. There's one of them ends up being a record special session for length, 34 days or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know. I know. Incredible. I mean, Jim, I know I sound like a Pollyanna here, but I'll tell you, that man was something else. People just, even to this day, don't know how great he was.
Mm-hmm.
In his own quiet way.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever travel around the state with him on...
I traveled around the state. I went to Taiwan for him.
Uh-huh.
He begged me to go on his Middle East trip, and I wouldn't go with him. And the reason I didn't go with him was because in those days, women were not well received over there. And I didn't want to be
yeah.
hanging that burden on him. And he kept begging and begging, and I kept saying,
yeah.
I just don't think it's wise.
Yeah.
Did not go to Japan with him, though I knew all the Japanese, and when they came
mm-hmm.
to the States, I would work with them. It was better that I stayed home, plus we had the Rajneeshis going.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was really in the forefront of that, and
yeah.
just very, we were both very uncomfortable about, when I went to Taiwan, the governor stayed in town.
Yeah.
We just felt more comfortable having somebody there, because that was getting very, very onerous, and,
yeah.
and it could have been... disastrous.
Yeah, absolutely.
But travel around the state with him, yes. But not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't travel. I'd usually send staff out with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was good for staff to get out.
Oh, yeah.
To see what's really going on. Don't get captured in that building.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Did attend all the governor association meetings with him.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was a key staff person for him. You
right.
know, it was meeting
right.
with everybody and following through on what was left. And
yeah.
Those I enjoyed, and he was very good, very good. The governors all appreciated him.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you one funny story.
Mm-hmm.
The first trip I took with him to the National Governors Meeting, which was usually held late January, early February in Washington, D.C. And, of course, they always had their big dinner with the president. And
had Lawn with us, our security, and Lawn didn't leave. And I said, Lawn, aren't you going with the governor over to make sure? He said, well, no, he takes a taxi. I said, he does what? He takes a taxi. Well, instantly my vision is this yellow taxi pulling up in the...
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. Well, what was happening is that all the other governors, the minute they got there, they either rented a limo or they flew their own limos in.
Oh.
A lot of them flew their own limos in.
Uh-huh.
And I said, nuh-uh. No, no, I don't care how humble this man is. You don't go to the White House
right.
in a taxi cab. So from that point forward, we rented a limo every minute we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Lawn would drive him around.
That's great.
That one almost embarrassed me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Your Middle East misgivings, you need to know that when Queen Elizabeth went to Saudi Arabia, she was declared to be a man.
Really?
By the Saudi religious
but see,
and
that's
government.
The, yeah.
Because the, you know, they couldn't, the king couldn't shake her hand.
No, nothing.
None of that stuff. So she was declared to be a man. And they had a great trip, and it worked out fine.
No kidding. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Well, that was my biggest fear. Plus, they were taking anybody of any notoriety as hostages and trying to
exactly.
get money. And before the governor left, he made me sign. Mm-hmm. That if he were taken hostage, which he doubted he would be, but he said, if, mm-hmm. you do not let anybody negotiate for me.
Mm-hmm.
No way. Mm-hmm. I said, Vic, I can't do that. He said, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you can't let Dolores either.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thanks, Vic.
Yep.
But I understood where he was coming from.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Dolores, let's shift a little bit to family. So, did the family go visit him in the office? Did you see them much? I mean, he in the 1992 stuff, and a little bit with me, he really talks about having missed raising his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. You know, Dolores was a great political spouse from his point of view, but she was so happy to get home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. One of her first words were, so good to be home.
Yeah. So what was... The family, did you see those kinds of things in the office? Did you socialize with them? I mean...
Yes. In our day, there was nothing to support the governor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
There was no money, there were mm-hmm. no funds, no nothing. And I don't know, you maybe uncovered this, but most governors, when they were elected, would... raise money and they'd call it kind of their slush fund. It was
yeah,
just this pot
yeah,
of money over
yeah.
here. And every governor
spent his too fast. But
yeah.
yeah.
But every governor up to Vicatia had done that.
Yeah.
Both Republican and Democrat.
Yeah.
They found out Governor Atiyah had started that. Lee Johnson did.
Mm-hmm.
And blew out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Vic said, give the money back. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing to financially support anything that Dolores Atiyah did. Plus, mm-hmm. they had to rent the house from
right.
the state of Oregon.
Which raised the rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And only half the house was heated. I mean, I can give you
yeah.
all kinds of stories on that. But God loved Dolores. She would entertain all those legislators when
mm-hmm.
they'd come to town, and she'd have to do it in shifts 2 days in a row. Put out all the wonderful food.
Mm-hmm.
She'd have one girl helping her. We did have one little tiny room. It was almost like a closet.
Mm-hmm.
And we made that Dolores' room.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a volunteer. We found a volunteer for her to help her write thank you notes, organize her trips, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dolores was in and out.
Yeah.
Not... I can't say frequently,
mm-hmm.
but sporadically,
mm-hmm.
and we always enjoyed it when she was there.
Mm-hmm.
She was always very presentable. She went way beyond. She'd have Easter egg hunts for all the staff's kids.
Mm-hmm.
When my daughter got married, she had a big shower for her.
Mm-hmm.
When my daughter went to college, she pledged the same sorority as Dolores, so Dolores gave her sorority pin
mm-hmm.
to be initiated with. When my daughter got married, Vic did a proclamation that named the Princess of Oregon and his her husband the prince, uh-huh. and how the prince had to answer to the princess, and
right.
it's a beautiful proclamation. It's just wonderful. Dolores went on several trips with us.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, you hear horror stories about governor's wives
mm-hmm.
and how they get in the way and get demanding.
You've been reading too much about Virginia's governor.
Yeah.
My wife has been fascinated. She can't put those stories down.
Oh, I know. Isn't it amazing? but I have to say, it goes on. It went on here in Oregon, big time.
Yeah.
But not Dolores. Hmm. Not Dolores. In fact, I'd have to pick the phone up and call her and say, Dolores, you doing okay? Stop by mm-hmm. the office when you're in. Is there anything
mm-hmm.
you need?
Mm-hmm.
She was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
She obviously understood what she had to do as the wife to Vicatia and
right.
support him. The kids, I don't want to say they got cheated.
Uh-huh.
He loved his kids. I mean, if they were to show up at the in the Capitol building, they were in his office right away.
Yeah.
Started having grandkids. He was thrilled to start having grandchildren.
Yeah.
And their daughter, when she first married, they bought a little tiny house. I mean, a little tiny house
uh-huh.
here in Salem for her and her husband to live in. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Loved having her here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he did worry.
Mm-hmm.
I think he worried that he did. But you know what? Until he was governor, it probably wasn't as crucial as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of men work long hours.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
more than 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And it probably was no different. I mean, if he still was in the retail business selling rugs.
Yeah,
he
still would have been there 6 days a week no matter what.
And I think, but I think Vic worried about it more than he had to worry about. Now, since his death, I've spent a lot of time with Suzanne. She's probably having the hardest time.
Yeah, no, that's what I've heard from basically everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one night I was getting texts from her at 1 a.m.
Wow.
She's going through all of this stuff and it brings back memories.
Exactly.
And I think she's having, but she was kind of a daddy's girl, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Tom has his own life going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Suzanne's divorced, and it's just very unsettling for her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I was talking with Suzanne, talked with her several times at the service, but I was talking to her right in the middle of the rotunda, right where it's roped off there. And Vern Duncan's daughter came over, and Suzanne had talked about how cool it was to be in college, and people say, "What did your dad do?" But you know, they're politicians, they're corrupt. It's like, no, they're not. You don't know my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And Vern Duncan's daughter came over and said, "Oh, it's exactly what happened to me." And exactly, you don't know my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are
mm-hmm.
straight arrow kinds of guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a neat little bonding moment there.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the rotunda.
Well, they're both good kids.
Yeah.
I love both Tom and Suzanne, and they've always been very good to me, and I'll stick by them to the end. And I loved his brothers. His two brothers were
mm-hmm.
just absolutely delightful.
Yeah. Yeah, Ed is sending me his only copy. He wrote a book about the Atiyah brothers.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Before, just right when they retired.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's sending his
only that's
copy
wonderful.
To me. And so I'm going to scan the bejeebers out of it and get it back to
that's
him.
That's wonderful.
Ed's
a doll. I love Ed.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him. I mean, I really gave him a lot of extra attention. It's got to be hard on him to have lost his twin brother and now his other brother.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 92, but
mm-hmm.
still, that's
mm-hmm.
one after another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, back to Dolores as a first lady, you couldn't
mm-hmm.
have asked. From a staff viewpoint.
Right.
No demands.
Yeah.
No pushing, no scolding us, no, I mean, she did her thing over here
mm-hmm.
That she needed to do, and the rest was up to Governor Atiyah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jim, I just can't tell you how lucky I was to have to work for for those people.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. And, you know, we were considered family, Denny, myself, and Lon Holbrook,
mm-hmm.
and any family occasion we got. I mean, he truly did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he always said, "You'll always be my family." Well, yeah, I can say that to a lot of people, too. But I think he truly did. I mean, we were always part of whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how close we all became.
Yeah.
I hope Dolores does okay. Bless her heart.
Yeah.
I got to get up and see her.
Yeah.
Have you had any opportunity to...
I mean, I just was able, when I would go over and talk to him, you know, kind of wave. But she was always kind of in the back. She had an attendant with her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
That's too bad. It'd be so nice to know her perspective on it all. But,
yeah, mm-hmm. But I think that's past.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. I'm afraid it is.
Yeah.
Too bad. Too bad.
We've been going for about an hour and 15 minutes here. So let's do one last thing and then can call it.
Okay, whatever. Okay. My time is your time.
Okay. I find an hour and a half is good just for me processing for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get done with these things and it's like, oh, more questions. Good. I have more questions. But also, you know, that's a good chunk of time. There have been references just by Vic obliquely, by others. I think you might have, at the service, he would lose his temper behind the scenes, apparently. But, you know, there's this nice guy here. What was losing his temper about? Was it the short thing, like when he came into your office and 15 minutes later came back in and said, I went too far? I mean, was that blowing off steam for him? I mean,
no.
What did you see with
that? I would not say
frustration?
I wouldn't say he lost his temper.
Okay.
Not ever.
Okay.
I never saw him lose his temper.
Okay.
Angry, yes.
So, okay.
And visibly angry. Now, I'm sure there were times where he was angry inside.
Uh-huh.
But he had this innate ability just to not show it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Schmidt. Do you know who Ron
mm-hmm.
Schmidt is
mm-hmm.
when I mentioned his name?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he badly wanted to be involved with the IT administration. And
mm-hmm.
he did everything in his power to become involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we hired Pius Schmidt Westerdahl to do some of the commercials.
Right.
And it was his last, we were having budget problems, and I can't remember if the governor was actually running for re-election or we were about to run for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was right in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Schmidt called me and said he wanted to meet with me. He had a perfect idea for the governor that
mm-hmm.
would not only lock in his election, it would make him a hero to the citizens of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, I want to hear it.
Sure.
So I meet him. I meet him in Portland at a bar. And Ron and I sit and visit, and he lays the plan on me, and I say, Ron, it's not going to fly. Oh, yeah, he said, it will. He said, you know, once Vic realizes what it'll do for him politically,
mm-hmm.
he's got no choice, Jerry. He's got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mean you're not going to let me present it to him? You're going to withhold it from him? I said, no. I'll make him aware of your suggestion. But it's not going to fly, Ron. I'm telling you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste your time. It is not going to fly. Well, then Ron got angry at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame him. I mean, he
mm-hmm.
wanted to present his idea, and he believed in it, and I'm becoming the wall. Which, by the way, I never was. I always passed on to the governor in my daily briefings
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the scuttlebutt on up.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I said, okay, Ron, you know, you've done some work for us. You deserve to meet with him. I'll call you and let you know when you can see him. I did. Ron showed up, went in the governor's office with him,
mm-hmm.
and Ron lays out his plan. And his plan is very simple. Governor, cut state employees' salaries 10% across the board, doesn't matter who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll free up money to solve your budget problem. And people in Oregon who are sick and tired of state employees will think you are the hero. Silence. I mean, absolute silence. And I literally watched his eyes get blacker.
Mm-hmm.
He got up from his desk chair. Stood up with his hands on his desk, gritting his teeth, literally,
mm-hmm.
turned around to the back of his desk chair, leaned forward, looked Ron right in the eyes, and he said, don't you ever run your pink elephants in front of me in my office again.
meeting over. That's the kind of anger.
Yeah.
Not loose temper.
Right.
Anger.
Right.
And he was angry. Nobody was going to use state employees for political purposes.
Right.
And that's the kind of gamesmanship that Vic would not tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
I warned Ron.
Exactly.
That was the end of that.
Yeah.
And pretty nearly the end of Ron.
Yeah. No, from other sources and a little bit from the oral history, yeah, Ron basically kind of put over on the side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good, Ron. Find something else to do.
That's right. Don't bother us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I'm telling you, the way I describe that is not intense enough. I mean, you literally could see him, and on more than one occasion, I witnessed it. You could just see his body, his eyes, everything change.
So when you saw it, it was focused, you know, to the Ron in the room. Mm-hmm. So there's a clear message.
Oh boy.
Okay. Yeah.
No doubt.
No doubt one way or the other.
No doubt whatsoever.
Okay.
And if you don't get the message, then there's something wrong with you. Huh?
Yeah.
It was very clear.
Yeah.
Very, very clear. Then I saw another instance that to this day still bothers me. We knew funny things were going on over at SAFE.
Mm-hmm.
And the board was all gubernatorial appointments.
Mm-hmm.
And governor had a couple of his good friends on there.
Mm-hmm.
And the AG and it was Dave Frohnmayer and Stan Long who came and met with me behind closed doors. And we were getting ready to do the infamous raid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they came over to meet with me and they said, you asked us to go over and take a look at what the funds are, which we did. I mean, I knew in my heart, having come out of the insurance business, I knew in my heart that they weren't being honest with us with what the reserves were and that they had excess reserves. And that if we were going to do the SAFE raid, I wanted to be sure.
Yeah.
That what I thought was true. And on the quiet, the AG's office had been investigating, and they came back and behind closed doors said, there's some games being played. I think, Jim, I'm not positive, but I think it was the Oregon Log Truckers Association that Monty Montgomery represented.
Hmm.
And they had some kind of a special deal with SAFE.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were kind of running their own workers' comp under the auspices of SAFE.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to go back. I mean, it was a very complex thing. And the AG's office beginning to tell me that Monty Montgomery had been playing some games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to shorten the story, Monty Montgomery could have gone to prison
mm-hmm.
after the investigation was completed.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, my Montgomery, one of the governor's friends. They said, yep. I said, we've got to tell the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So I got them into the governor's office the next day, and Stan and Dave and myself were sitting there. It was hard to do, Jim. It really was hard to do because of the trust that man had in everybody.
Yeah.
And I said, Governor, we have some bad news for you, and I've asked Stan and Dave to explain it to you. And then they did. They went through. Again, the room was absolutely silent.
Mm-hmm.
Total different body.
Yeah.
Head down, body limp, and he just sat there. And finally raised his head up and he said, that's not the Monty Montgomery I know. We said, we know that, Governor, but you need to understand this is real.
Mm-hmm.
Head down. I mean, total, absolute, what would be the right word for a man who showed very little emotion?
Mm-hmm.
He was devastated
mm-hmm.
that a guy he had trusted did that to the governor.
Yeah.
And you know, another Monty Montgomery story. I mean, we're in a special session, and Monty Montgomery is having a big fundraiser down in Eugene. This is before all this happened. And the governor's down there. This is one time that John Kitzhaber and Ted Kulongoski were giving me a bad time. They, who had promised they'd be with us on this very short, quick, special session, mm-hmm. word got to me that they were holding out. Mm-hmm. And so I immediately marched down to them and said, yeah, come on, guys, you promised.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously they're playing a game, you mm-hmm. know. And I got concerned enough, because we wanted to end it that night.
Yeah.
I got concerned enough, I got back to my office and I called Vic down at Monty's office, and late at night. And somebody answered the phone, I asked to talk to Monty. So I finally got Monty on the line. I said, Monty, I have to speak to the governor right away. Well, he's busy. I said, Monty, this is Jerry Thompson. Do you mm-hmm. understand? I need to speak to him. We have a special session going and I need the governor now.
Mm-hmm.
I must have hung on the phone for 15 minutes. Now, you understand, when the legislator's moving, they're moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Finally, Vic came on the line, and we got it resolved. But later, Monty Montgomery was bragging to everybody that he made me wait on the line for the governor, and besides that, he could make the governor, when the governor came to visit him, he could make him wait 30 minutes out in his outer office. In other words, look at me, I'm the kingpin. Never told the governor that part of the story.
Yeah.
But then this other happened.
Yeah.
There was no need.
Yeah.
It devastated the governor.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Hmm.
But see, that was part one of those deciders, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because the Pacific University is involved with the archives and that kind of stuff. And Denny is, you know, former fundraisers. And our fundraisers are an interesting, weird world. You know, God bless them all. But there are friends that the governor has, really close friends. He goes down to Southern California,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that kind yeah. of stuff. And so there's names there that, you know, should be money for the projects. And the governor's really reticent on saying, well, you can call this person and that person. And so, you know, I can't ask him anymore. But I just kind of wonder if there's those kinds of dynamics going on.
There could be, but I'd have to see the names.
Mm-hmm.
And someday I'd be happy to sit down and help you guys with that. But there could be that, but also I have to tell you, he was the worst fundraiser there ever.
Yeah.
He worse than me, and I hate it.
Yeah.
But literally, we'd lock him in a room and say, here's a list, and you're not coming out until you called them all. Because there are certain people that would only give unless they heard from him.
Yeah.
Oh, he hated it.
Yeah.
And it might be he's embarrassed to tap people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my concern about what we did to raise money for the Memorial Fund.
Mm-hmm.
I kept going through my head, would the governor approve of this? Would the governor approve of this? And then finally I decided, wait a minute. He gave us authority. He gave Denny and me authority, and we got to have money.
Exactly.
And I don't know why it came to me, but in the middle of the night he died, it came to me, wait a minute, the Oregon State Capital Foundation, of which I've been a member since its inception, stands for everything the governor
yeah.
loved. People of Oregon, the history of the Capitol building itself,
mm-hmm.
Preserving all of that. If we could use their 501(c), and while we can't use it as a pass-through,
mm-hmm.
why could they not collect the contributions, and if there's excess left, commit to us that it would be used for similar situations, like we do for the governor's portraits.
Yeah.
Well, the minute I mention it to him, I mean, they're right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
Sure saved us, because I'm not calling
people. Oh, no. It's like having to raise private funding for the president's inaugural and stuff like that.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, and in those cases, often, you still got your core of the big givers.
Yeah. The election just happened.
You're not going to do anything. Yeah, I'm going to
yeah,
do anything. Stay close.
Exactly.
Governor lived too long.
Exactly.
We didn't have any of those left.
Yeah.
That was the thing that was worrying me, because I, you know, that's the first thing that went through my mind is how we're going to raise the money. All of his good ones are gone.
Yeah.
Unlike Senator Hatfield, Jerry Frank picked the phone up to six people and they raised,
yeah.
I mean, their memorial was, it cost over
way up at like $35,000.
Wow.
We're not even close to that.
Yeah. It's funny, the people I kind of connected with, just because I was there doing television early, so it was the Lone Fir Cemetery people. And Vic and Barbara were the kind of the honorary people on their board and stuff. And it was just really fascinating. One of the Lone Fir Cemetery people had been a staffer back in D.C. and then come back here, and she works for a finance firm or something like that. And she was talking about the difference between this and the Hatfield one. She said, the Hatfield one, just then Jerry Frank was like seven rows in front of us and said, it was a Jerry Frank production.
Totally.
You know, tickets, order, this, that, or the other. She said, just walking in here, this feels so much like a Vicatea production.
Well, I don't know if you heard me say it, but I declared it his last open house.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
As far as I was concerned, that's exactly what he would have wanted.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, of course, Mark Hatfield was Jerry Frank.
Oh, yeah.
I'll
say
it right straight out. I mean, I got Jerry Frank stories to tell you about Vicatea, too.
Yep.
Interesting world we live in, Jim.
It is. It is.
Okay, I'm going to give you something else.
Okay.
You got something else?
Nope.
I don't know if I've been any help to you at
all. You have been great.
But you know that I will always be available to you.
Yep.
This, I thought, was probably something you may not even have.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
Toward the end of his last term,
mm-hmm.
the pressure came on to get a sales tax passed.
Yes.
Do tax reform.
Yes.
Governor was opposed to mm-hmm. the sales tax. Period. End of subject.
Mm-hmm.
And someday I'll tell you the Jerry Frank story behind that one.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Frank and I don't speak anymore because of it, if that gives you any clue. Anyway, he finally called me in his office and he said, you know what? I've got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And if a sales tax plan can be designed that meets my requirements,
mm-hmm.
I'll be willing to go out with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we went to work. And we designed exactly
mm-hmm.
what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then the campaign began.
Mm. Ugh. Yep.
That was something else.
Yep.
This is all the documentation.
There we go. Wow.
The bill, what we did.
Fantastic.
The only thing it doesn't have is the campaign material.
Uh-huh.
Being in the governor's office, I never
exactly.
let campaign. I kept it completely separated.
Exactly.
But this will excuse some of my handwritten stuff. Those
no,
are notes to myself.
That's great.
And you do not need to scan it. I have no reason to keep it other than I'm very proud of the work we did on it. But who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what I did on it?
Yeah. No, that's fantastic.
But it even has some of our statistical analysis. You might be able to use it. You might not.
Yeah. No, handwritten stuff is great.
The
very first thing that I use from the archive with one of my classes 2 years ago, I teach a parties and elections classes during election years. So all my students are just in campaigns right now, off doing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so 2 years ago, presidential, the conventions were the first 2 weeks of school.
Oh, my gosh.
So the first thing I did is we, you know, met class. The next time we met, we went to the archives, and there's all of Vic's stuff from his conventions.
Yeah.
You know, which is buttons and pictures and fun.
Just,
but the handwritten notes that he kept, and especially the handwritten notes, because he was, by God, going to get a neutral Israeli view into that platform. Never successful at all. But just
but
you
that
know,
was,
with all this stuff here, you know, this is basically what he wrote out to go in and talk to the platform committee, and you know, the students' eyes kind of get big. It's like, A, a Republican thought like this?
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And B, wow, you know, this is amazing. I teach a Middle East class for just a couple of weeks, and we have a short January term, and I'm going to use some of that in that class.
How neat. Because
I've
neat.
Now done enough stuff here.
Yeah.
I can shake things out from his Middle East trips to use in the class.
And you know, when it was Reagan and Ford, you know that he was supporting Ford.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And he got in real trouble with the Reagan people here.
Yes, absolutely.
One of whom was my best friend, Diana Evans, who's even mentioned in Reagan's books.
Mm-hmm.
And she just couldn't understand why Vicatea couldn't support Reagan.
Yeah.
But boy, once it was over.
Oh, yeah.
There he was.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's our guy. I'm with him.
And that's the right on Air Force One. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yes. And you know that I was supposed to go on Air Force One with him.
Oh.
didn't do it.
Oh.
But that was just my way. I just didn't feel like I was entitled. Yeah. Go, Governor, enjoy.
Yeah.
But bring me some memento of
it. Exactly. It's funny. I can't remember whose description it is. It's either his or I can't remember if Denny was with him. I can't remember who it was, but somebody was saying, you know, we landed and people just started filling their pockets.
Yeah, well, it had to be Vic because Denny wasn't on the flight with him.
Yeah.
He wasn't on the flight with him.
Yeah, very funny.
Yeah. But he was like a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that called him and said, you want to go home on Air Force One?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding at all, Governor. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I immediately got on the horn and said, yep, he's accepted. And he had to pass clearance and do all that. He was like a little kid.
Yeah.
He was so excited.
Yeah.
You know, here's a governor and he's excited.
Yep. Yep.
Anyway.
That's great. Yeah.
Take it. And
fantastic.
This can go to the archives too if you like.
Okay.
But,
yep.
That's.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. So good. Good interview and.
Well, I hope
so. Three things.
I hope I just don't talk too much.
No. You're doing great. And it's. I mean, you've seen how I interview. We just kind of. I want you to tell stories. And. You know, guide to where the stories need to go, but that's
do you want my box of all my Yellow Page notes from the time I served him?
If you want,
you could not decipher them. They're in not my own brief hand, and they're. But you know,
anything you want to give.
My goal was to transcribe those and put them all in a long, just day after day after day after day for my kids, and I got started. But I mean, it's gorgeous.
Oh yeah. Huge stuff. Yeah.
Some of I look at now and think, what was that? But I'll keep going through it, but some things may come to mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so I hope this is, you know, a process that kind of helps you coalesce things. And, you know, as you feel comfortable, you know, more stuff is great.
Okay.
Because if I don't use it directly in the book, you know, it'll be there for future people.
I don't care if you do.
Yeah.
But I do like the tsunami and like the Rajneesh stuff. I don't know quite what you want to do with some of that stuff.
Well, the when I get to, especially the Rajneeshis, they're going to be a particular part. But it's going to be how forthcoming you want to be.
I would be with this one. I would be very forthcoming.
Okay. It's
nowhere else have I been forthcoming. I mean, people have pressed me, but I just...
Yeah. And it's because it's... You know, once again, when Vic and I talked about this book, it's funny, the very first time I sat down to interview him, the first 10 minutes were, these are my expectations for the book. And his expectations were, you're going to write the damn thing, and I'm just a source. And it's like, perfect.
And he was sincere about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, it's him as governor, but it's him as governor in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rajneeshis... in effect, an untold part of the story because, you know, there was Norma and then a little bit of Vern were kind of the people out in front because their offices were impacted and so much stuff was happening behind the scenes.
That we couldn't talk about.
You couldn't talk about.
No, see, that's why people do not realize the whole story.
Exactly.
We were in a position where we could not publicly talk about it. If we did, we would have hurt everything we were doing.
Yep.
Yep.
And so that's a crucial part.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much, you know, there's going to be probably a Rajneeshi chapter, but, you know, if as much as you're willing to do, I will take all.
But you can I did toy with writing the, because I'm the only one's got the whole story. I mean, I've got the CIA, I got the FBI, I got the fire, what is it, tobacco arms and whatever it is.
ATF,
I mean, they're all living in my office and we're plotting, we're planning, we're coordinating and couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
And nobody even knows that.
Yeah. One of the things, because I talked to Vic about it, but on so many things, you know, he's willing to go this deep and then on some things way down here. But, you know, he's got his stories locked in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go along. And so great stuff. But one thing that he said really struck me. He said he'd never seen such great coordination among local, state, and federal.
During that time.
And thinking about all the stuff, you know, in this post-9/11 world, where clearly that doesn't happen. We have the test in Portland, and they still can't do this stuff. So I think there's an amazing story to be told here in this post 9/11 world that says, A, it can be done, and B, get your acts together.
Well, but if the coordination came about because I went to the governor and I said, first we had the politicals involved, who always wanted to get their political bent out there to make them look good.
Yeah.
Secondly, we had the different federal agencies who also wanted to be. Oh, it's just horrible. I don't believe that goes on. And I got to tell you, we didn't have that in state government. One, the governor wouldn't allow it. Consequently, I wouldn't allow it. We coordinated everything. Finally, I went to the governor and I said, Governor, I'm going to put sign my fist on my desk. I said, they won't coordinate. He said, go for it. And I did. I slammed my fist on the desk and I said, you will sit here and coordinate with me and we will have a conference call every day and each one of you will give a report with the other ones on the line.
So it took a lot of cracking the heads to make this
happen. It did. Yeah. It did. But let me go to another example. When we went back and briefed the governor before he took his mid-east trip, they opened up. I'm the State Department. Who all did we go to? And State Department, National Security Council, FBI or CIA, maybe all four of them. I can't remember. Just to brief the governor, what to be aware of, what he could find out for them. Jim, I am not exaggerating. We'd be in with the NSC guys, and they snout. Now, when you go to the State Department, they'll tell you this, but they don't know anything. But we do. We've got the facts. Okay. Go to the State Department. Now, NSC probably told you, but they don't know. But we do, and here's what we know.
Mm-hmm.
All the way around, that was that way. Does that scare you?
Yeah.
Why can't they coordinate?
Yeah.
They should all have the same goal. I mean, that was my pitch during the Rajneesh time. We've all got the same goal. Keep the population of Oregon safe and secure and calm this down and get over it. That's the goal. Don't let the rednecks get out of control.
Exactly.
And don't let the Rajneeshis
get
out of control.
The red robes get out of control.
And protect the people in Antelope.
Yep.
It's simple.
Yeah.
So let's all talk to each other.
Yeah.
Even Norm Paulus. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Did you know that she was starting to write her biography not too long ago?
Yep.
You heard the story?
Yeah.
Russell Sadler?
Yeah.
Have you talked to him?
Mm-mm.
Well, he called me. He wanted me to help with the Rajneesh section. And I said, I can't write. Then I couldn't. I said, I'm collaborating with Les Zeitz on a series of articles he's running. And I said, Russ, without talking to Les, I just don't feel right doing it. Well, time went by. But I said, call me, you know, in a few months. Well, he called me. He didn't call me. So finally he called and I said, what's happening with the book? He said, I'm not writing anymore. I said, how come? He said, well, I came to discover that her memory is what she wants it to be. I thought that was an interesting way to put it.
That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah.
That's a very good way to put it.
Now I'm afraid she's not able to.
No, no. She's beyond that, I think.
Which is too bad.
Yeah.
Absolutely too bad. Well, did you get, I'm curious, you don't have to answer me, but did you get enough from the governor?
Yeah, no. Because I met with him four times, so I've got like 6 to 8 hours of stuff. Good, deep questions that when I started this, you got to get this stuff because who knows how long you have. So what I don't have from him is learning things from other people to go back and say, so when this happened, what were you thinking? Why did you do that?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's those little things.
Yeah.
There. And that is also, that my job is to go through the archives because he kept notes on a lot of this stuff. So that there may be that kind of stuff in there. But it's just I'm not able to take the shortcut.
Yeah.
And go say, so...
Well, I promise you, I will start going through all mine because with my day-to-day, everyday involvement with him, there may be something in my notes that would be helpful. I don't know, but I'll start going through all that stuff.
And anything you can do. And the archive has been really good. As they get funding, they put people on things. And so one thing that occurred to me is I'm going to hire a research assistant, a graduate student, and then probably an undergrad for other kinds of things. And one thing I was going to have the undergrad, which would be good, is going through and on all of those trips, I need to know dates, all these kinds of things, and finding out that, you know, in a 7-day trip, he could have 85 or 90 different engagements.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know what those things are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a great little research thing.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out our archivists have already gone through and used their own work-study money, and they've done a lot of that stuff already. So
it's
they're
amazing what
they're doing doing some really neat stuff.
I am amazed. I am so... You know that Antoinette Hatfield said to me, why couldn't they do this for Mark?
Yeah.
I mean, she's really sad.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel bad for her. I mean, here he was a graduate from Willamette, and she said, I don't know why, and I felt like saying, well, talk to your good friend, Jerry Frank.
Yeah.
I'm being naughty.
Exactly.
I am being naughty, Jim. I'm sorry. Yes,
but, you know, Pacific was thrilled. I mean, clearly it's the biggest thing that's happened in the library and the archive.
The energy you could feel.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, when he called and said, okay, send everything to Pacific University, he was really excited, and I thought.
Yeah. Pacific?
No, it wasn't Pacific. It's Vic. Are you sure that
mm-hmm.
they're going to do something
mm-hmm.
with it? Unlike the other schools who are going to put it in a file in the basement. And
Oh,
he was excited. He was really excited. And then wasn't it wonderful we got to do what we did last fall?
Oh, yeah.
And perfect.
Still...
And he was walking out all by himself to the car.
He does that so many times.
I know. But he was walking by himself, and he looked so alone, and he was starting to get very frail. Every time he hugged me, I noticed. Mm.
Yeah. His voice.
Oh, yeah, he couldn't project anymore. And I ran up and caught up with him. And I said, aren't you pleased and proud? And he had a little tear.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've not ever seen that.
Yeah. And we put that with his wedding and his first inauguration.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It just really is, Jim. That's got to make you guys feel good.
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny.
And you deserve it. I'm going to tell you. When you agreed to write it, Denny and I were both so... I was so angry about the other situation.
Mm-hmm.
I just... And in fact, Denny didn't even know about it. I called him. I was spewing all over him. Did you let the governor do this? No, he didn't even know about it. And we were both so relieved.
Yeah.
And governor was very pleased, too. But see, that was another time when he had complete faith and loyalty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Backfired on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't make him embarrassed by it. We just said, we'll take care of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But, to see what you guys at Pacific University have done. And then the display at the memorial service.
I know.
I have had more people. You'll find, you need to take this back with you.
Uh-huh.
Because, as I said, I didn't get even a piece of cake or a cup of coffee. I mean, I was about the last one to leave the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else had gone, but. I have had more people that I've either run into or on the telephone
mm-hmm.
say to me, when did all this happen at Pacific University and why Pacific University?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was perfect to have at the... And they just rave and rave and rave.
Yeah.
I just think that's cool.
Yeah, that's great. One of the questions that I didn't really get a chance to ask him is, it's still a bit of a mystery, why Pacific? Yeah, he served on our board, but at
in
some point
his
he
district.
Fell in love.
In his district.
Yeah, in his district.
Mm-hmm. He always said that to me.
Yeah.
Because I would say, why Pacific? Well,
yeah.
I think you probably know his first choice was U of O.
Yeah, exactly.
And he kind of got that.
Yeah.
Sure, we'll take it.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're Phil Knight?
Oh, yeah.
You're
yeah,
not.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he would have always followed that up with the. He knew you guys would do something with it.
Yeah.
And could use it.
Yeah.
And that's what he wanted.
Yeah.
Not that it was his ego.
No, it's got to be actively.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great what you guys are doing. It really is.
Fantastic.
It's great.
Good, good, good.
Okay.
Okay.
Now call if you need anything. I mean, even if it has nothing to do with my... Oh.
I think I might have just sat on my keys.
I thought it was coming out of there.
What? Yep. There we go. Who knew it went that far? I've actually been having a hard time opening the doors.
Ew.
You have to kind of aim it right.
Yeah.
It's like 7 years old now. And it's like, but apparently this works.
Yeah.
From a long ways
go.
Away.
There you go. I thought it was coming out of there.
It's like, no, this doesn't make that sound. How did I do that?
You got what you need from...